Reader's Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Well, welcome everyone to Reader's Entertainment Radio. I'm your host, Sheila English, and with me is my wonderful co-host, Anita Higman. Hi, Anita.
Great to be here, as always, Sheila. Thank you.
Now, Anita, are you getting any of the snow that I'm getting here in Kentucky?
Not one bit. I'm so sorry. I'm in the Houston area, and it's 70 degrees, and everybody's in shorts.
Okay. Maybe I don't want to talk to you now. No.
I'm so sorry.
Well, I'm here freezing. We were talking right before the show started. I was going to go do an errand, and my car doors were frozen solid. So I've been stuck in the house, and which is actually okay. It gave me some time to get some work done, get some reading done. But 70 degree weather, I'm a little jealous, I have to admit. Now, Anita, you're going to be wearing a couple of hats this evening, so it's a little different for us, very fun. You're not only going to co-host tonight, but since you're an author, I'll be asking you some questions as well. And we have Karen Ball with us. Karen is an amazingly talented lady who's going to be discussing how to promote the Christian novel. And she'll be talking about her books and what she's doing to promote them. Now, real quick, for our listeners, you can call into the show and chat with us at 646-200-4071 or stop by our chat room. We have that up, and you can send us some questions there as well. As I said, you know, we have with us tonight Karen Ball, whose novel was nominated by the Romantic Times reviewers as the best inspirational novel of 2007 and is the senior acquisitions editor at a major publishing house, which I think just makes all of that knowledge that you have to share about promotion, you know, even more unique. So we're going to get a really unique perspective. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Thanks so much, Sheila. I'm delighted to be here.
And we're very thrilled to have you here, too. Now, Anita, since you're wearing two hats, I'm going to let you go first. I know you've been waiting to ask some questions of Karen, so why don't you go ahead and take the first round of questions?
I would love to. But first, I want to tell you a little more about Karen. She is the author of many popular novels, and her latest book, What Lies Within, as you said, was nominated by the Romantic Times reviewers as the best inspirational novel of 2007 and was nominated for a Christie Award, which is given for excellence in fiction. In addition to being a popular novelist, Karen has also been an editor in Christian publishing for 27 years and is currently the senior acquisitions editor for fiction at B&H Publishing. My first question is this. Since you're an editor, Karen, as well as a writer, how do you juggle those two careers? Is that an easy thing, or does it get really complicated?
Well, you know, I work with fiction, so I'll say it's an easy thing, and that'll tell you that I'm lying. No, it's not easy at all, and the main problem is that my job is far more than a 40-hour-a-week job. I travel a great deal. I did 15 trips last year traveling to my publishing house that I work for in Nashville, speaking at writers' conferences, going to meet with authors, doing acquisitions trips. This year, I'm trying to hold it down to about 10 trips, one of which will be actually to Germany to talk with foreign publishers about taking our fiction in to the foreign market, getting better penetration in that market. So I have a lot of hours and a lot of nights that I'm working fairly late into the night. So finding time to write is a real challenge. Now, I did take kind of a hiatus from writing for 2 years because I started the job with this particular publisher about 4 years ago when I was helping to build a fiction line from the ground up. And so that was just so time intensive, I could not add the writing in. But I'm back to writing now, which is a lot of fun. And what I do, and I know those of you who are full-time writers are just going to cringe at this, but I try to write 1 to 2 hours a day, and I do not write on the weekends because I travel so much. I've made a covenant with my family. I will not work on weekends when I'm at home, not for writing and not for my work at BH Publishing Group.
Well, I think that sounds wonderful. But I am very, very curious about you've talked about both, and you seem to love both. So which one do you enjoy the most, writing or
writing? You know, it's not a – I can't really say that I love one over the other. I love them both a great deal. The creative act of writing is such fun. My husband can always tell when I'm writing again. He'll come in and he'll see me at the computer, and he says there's just like this look of glee on my face as I'm creating these characters in this world. And as an editor, I love the synergy that takes place. I brainstorm with my authors, and then as I'm going through and doing the overview of what's called the macro edit, where I send them my editorial letter with suggestions on structure and character development, and then the hands-on edit when it's after it's been revised. It's all, every part of what I do, whether as a writer or as an editor, I absolutely love it. Although I will say, as an editor, I don't like paperwork. So that's the one downside to being an editor that I don't have to deal with so much as a writer.
I see. I wouldn't really have thought of that angle. That's interesting. I'm so glad you love them both equally. Well, I hear there's an interesting story behind this, but how did you get started writing? I'd love for everyone
to know
the story.
I've been writing, just from the standpoint, not being published, but the standpoint of writing ever since I was young. But as far as being published, I had been working in the Christian industry for about 20 years, and I have worked with most of the best-selling novelist in the Christian market. I acquired Francine Rivers for the Christian market and Karen Kingsbury, who's a New York Times bestseller, for the Christian market. And so I've had this amazing career, and these authors have become very good friends of mine. And I was walking through the aisles of the Christian trade show. It's called the International Christian Retail Show, 1 year with Francine. And we came to a booth that was for a publishing house called Multnomah, which is now my publishing house that I write for. And we were looking at the books that they were doing, and they were these wonderful inspirational romances. And I looked at Francine, and I said, if I ever decided to write, because my authors had all been telling me I should be writing, if I ever decide to actually write to be published, I said, these are the kinds of books I'd like to do. Well, I no sooner got home from that trade show than my phone rang, and I picked up the phone, and it was Lisa Berggren, who is now a best-selling novelist herself, but at that time she was heading up that particular line at Multnomah. It was the Palisades Pure Romance line, and she said that she overheard us talking and that she wanted to know if I would be interested in writing for her. And I said, well, sure. And so she told me to put together a proposal. I did so within that week and sent it off to her. And the next thing I knew, I had a 3-book contract.
Wow, that's a great story. I like that.
Yeah, I don't tell it very often at writers' conferences because they're going through all of the suffering and the rejection letters. And so I kind of stay in the background because I don't want to discourage anybody.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about that latest novel? I'm interested to hear, everyone I'm sure is interested, to tell us about what lies within that latest novel.
What Lies Within is the third book in the Family Honor trilogy. It focuses, the series focuses on a brother and two sisters. The basic premise is that their parents named them intentionally and prayed over their names, asking that God would bring forth the attributes of their names in their lives. My parents named us that way. My name, they had very high expectations for me. My first name is Karen, which means pure one. My middle name is Michelle, which means who is like God. So, they had a lot of faith in us. But and so each of the books is testing an attribute of walking in faith and an attribute of God. So the first book, the character's name is Avidan, which means God is just. And it's exploring, within the context of a suspense novel, the idea of God's justice and the world's justice. So there's a deputy sheriff who loses his whole family, and they don't know who's killed his family, and so how does he deal with that injustice? In What Lies Within, it's dealing with the older sister, and she is in a man's world of construction, and it's looking at the foundation of who we are, and what have you built your world on? Have you built it on your accomplishments? Have you built it on the things that the world says matters, or have you built it on what God says matters?
That's a beautiful response. How did you come up with this story? I mean, where do your ideas form from? Do they just from everywhere that you go and everything?
They
do.
They come from overhearing conversations. They come from reading newspapers. The idea for Shattered Justice came from, which is the first book in that series, came from reading an article about an actual sheriff in a rural area because they didn't have any EMTs in that area. He had to respond to an accident where some kids on ATVs had been hit by a drunk driver, and when he got there, where he turned over the first child and it was his son. He turned over the second child and it was his daughter. He lost all three kids in one fell swoop. And that's what started me thinking, when you spend your whole career working for justice for others, what happens when injustice hits you? And so for What Lies Within, it's actually very cool. I had been talking with my friend Francine Rivers, and she has such a love for God's word, and I longed for that. I wanted to be able to read scripture and to savor reading scripture. And so I asked God to give me that hunger and that longing to read his word. And when I opened up the book that I opened up to was the book of Nehemiah, which if you read scripture, you know that it's a minor prophet. And minor prophets are the books that people just generally don't read a whole lot. And I just thought, okay, fine. So I started reading Nehemiah. And as I'm reading the book, the novel just fell into place. I was taking notes as fast as I could write, because the whole novel and the characters' names and the basis for what they were doing and their motivations, it was all there in the book of Nehemiah. I took that notebook and I set it aside, and 15 years later, when it came time to write this particular story, that's the outline that I used.
That's an amazing story. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, your writing style, I'm sure, has evolved over the years. Who are your influences, and how did all of this evolve to make...
Well, my original influence in understanding the true power of story was C.S. Lewis. I remember as a kid when his Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe came out as a serial in the Sunday school papers, and I absolutely loved it. And so then I read everything that I could get my hands on of his, and just that scene where Aslan lays himself down on the stone table and the white witch kills him and the table cracks, and just that was so dramatic and just brought everything to life for me and what it was representing and what Christ did for us. And then when he's alive again and he's running and he's laughing, it was just so powerful. And that instilled in me the deep love for story that I have now. And through the years, there are a lot of writers that I've read who have influenced me, both novelists and writers of nonfiction, the devotional writers. L.B. Cowan's Streams in the Desert has been highly influential in helping me to understand how to help people understand through writing what a life of faith is about.
Well, that's interesting, and I'm sure all the many, many C.S. Lewis fans out there will love what you just said.
And that's why I brought the whole idea of Aslan into play in Shattered Justice. That's very much a part of the story, and understanding the power of the lion, the power of the Lion of Judah as he comes into our lives.
Well, I'm going to backtrack just for a minute. I didn't get a chance to ask you one more question, and you touched on this a little bit, but do you think being a professional editor helps you to be a better writer, or do you spend so much time sort of in that editing mode that maybe you sometimes have a little trouble being creative?
It's interesting. I have people ask me all the time how I shut the editor off. They're two completely different functions. And as a writer, you know this yourself. When you write, you have to just write. You have to take the editor, tie her up, put duct tape across her mouth, and shove her in a closet and close the door. And so it's a completely different function than when I'm editing. And when I'm editing, I'm coming alongside my writers. And so there's a synergy that takes place there, and it's a relational thing. When I'm writing, it's a more solitary thing, relational with the characters, but it's more solitary, and so it uses a completely different function. So I have never found it to be an issue, the whole idea of editing and writing, if it makes it difficult. As far as if it makes me better, I have the same blind spots that other writers have. The gal who is my editor, Julie Schwarzberg, she has a whole list of words that Karen should never use in her books again. I constantly have my characters nodding and smiling and grinning, and if people really did it as much as I have my characters doing it, they'd be like those bobble-headed dogs in the back of the car.
Okay, so that's a great answer. So editors really do need editors, too. Okay.
Oh, gosh, yes. I have yet to meet a writer of any sort who doesn't need an editor. And that's not to say they're not good writers, but everybody has blind spots.
I agree. All right. Well, Sheila, I'm going to hand the mic over to you, and now I'm going to let you ask Karen some questions, and I think you had some for me, too.
I do. You know, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit, just kind of segueing from this whole editors need editors idea. You know, Karen, I went over to your website, which I absolutely love, and for our listeners, you can go and look at KarenBallBooks.com. It's a very fun website. It's beautiful. It's clever.
Thanks.
One of the things when I was over there looking, I saw that you participated in a nonfiction novel called Writers on Writing.
Yes.
And, you know, you were talking about editors needing editors. Tell us a little bit about that book and your participation in that book.
I was contacted by the editors at Westminster Publishing House, and they had been talking with a lot of different writers. The gentleman is Jim Watkins, and he's been at writers' conferences with a lot of us, and he's led writers' conferences, and a lot of the faculty and staff are published novelists. And he contacted us and said that he wanted to do a collection of articles dealing with the writing and editing process from those who've actually done it, who have the hands-on experience. And so we all chose topics to address, and it's everything from how do you plot out a book and how do you do character arcs and those kinds of things. My article is on taming the fiction dragons. It's self-editing and the top issues that I've seen as an editor in fiction, and how I see these same issues no matter what level of writer, from beginners to multi-published. These seem to be the particular issues that people miss or that they need to refine in the process of their writing. And so I walk the writers through how to be aware of those things in your own writing after you're done writing. You never edit as you're writing, but when you're finished with the writing and you're time to go back and to review what you've done, I give them the points on how to go back in and identify those and how to deal with them.
So just so that people can find that again, that's at KarenBallBooks.com. I apologize, my dog just went a little crazy for a moment. We're all snowed in the house together, so we're probably all going a little crazy for the moment. Now, I want to go back to something else that you said. I was really impressed with this, and it's something that's really near and dear to my heart, too. You were talking about this this covenant that you made with your family to have the weekends off, and I think that's amazing. I mean, you're a writer, you're an editor, you know, you're traveling and you're doing promotion. How hard is it to have that balance and meet all of the expectations and needs of your family?
At first, it was very difficult. I am, as you can probably tell, a triple-A personality. I'm high in wanting to please. I'm high in wanting to go, go, go and do things and do it all to the best of my ability. And it took sitting down with my family and recognizing that, number one, I'm gone a lot, you know, 15 trips a year, and quite often I'm gone both weekends. So the first weekend I take off, the second weekend I come back. And so I miss a lot of time with my family from that. And the fact that I can work late into the evening, sometimes I've been in my office until 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night. And my husband, I hardly ever see him if I work on the weekends as well. And so sitting down with them and talking with them and just hearing them say, "We miss you," you know, we thought this was about family and spending time together. And so when you hear the people that you love saying those things to you, and you recognize not just that you're taking away from them, but I was taking away from myself. I need those relationships to be strong and to be restored by those relationships. And so at first, I felt like I should be able to do it all. But I finally had to recognize that I can't. I need time away. And what I found, and why it's not difficult now, is that being with my family and taking time away from those two occupations actually restores me and refreshes me so that I can come back and be better at it, rather than getting stressed out and getting so worn out emotionally that and mentally that I end up not doing either one well.
I love that, and that's going to kind of segue into my next question. Anita, let me turn this over to you. You know, some authors struggle with this part of the business, with the promotion and the balancing and being able to write, and thinking that, marketing requires so much time and you're kind of boasting. And how do you stay balanced, and how do you see promotion being a part of that balance?
Well, it definitely is time-consuming, but as far as the question about boasting, I still see it as very necessary, and I do write from a Christian worldview, as does Karen, and so there is a message of hope there, as well as entertainment. So I feel like that promoting my books is promoting Christ, so I don't have a problem with it. I don't feel that it is boasting, and I do feel it's necessary, and publishers these days really expect the author to sort of be a team player, and I don't mind doing that. So I get out, and I do quite a bit of promotion, so I don't have a problem with it.
May I respond to that from the publisher's point of view?
Yeah, please.
For a publisher, we look on the author's involvement in promotion and marketing as part of your job. It's a part of the partnership that we all enter into. Yes, the publisher will do what they can, but it takes more now than just the publisher doing the marketing. It takes so much more in this world. And fiction writing in particular is about relationship, the relationship that readers have with your characters, the relationship that they have with you, which is why websites and blogging and Twitter, that's all so important, because the more they feel that they know you and that they can care about you and that they are a part of what you're doing, the more that they will pick up your books and read them. So it's from the publisher's point of view, if I have two authors that I'm considering, and all things being equal, one is good at marketing or open to learning marketing, and the other is saying, oh, no, my job is just to write. You know, I'm leading it to God. I'm leading it to Jesus to promote my books. I'll go with the one who's willing to learn and who's willing to do the work.
Well, it's really become this team effort.
Absolutely.
You mentioned relationships, and, you know, and this is my own opinion, my own perspective, that you know, you have your publisher and your editor who can reach out in so many different ways, but those readers really are looking for that relationship. And the
you
only
better
person,
believe it, and there are so many books out there for them to buy. They need a reason to pick up yours.
Yeah, I absolutely believe that. Now, Anita, let me ask, what are some of the things that you do to promote your novels?
Well, first of all, this might sound a little unusual, but I really don't mind using my advance money on promotion. I don't mind doing that because I'm always hoping that I'll find the money on the back end, on the other end of things.
Oh, Anita, your publisher must love you.
I just don't have a problem with that. And also, if you want like a quick list or something of other things I do or what I do with the money, I do hire usually Circle of Seven Productions to do my book trailer. And with The Love Finds You Under the Mistletoe, the co-authored book that came out in September, the book trailer is just beautiful. They did a wonderful job. And I
That's
see
great.
That as one of many different things. I don't see it as the thing, but one of many different things that authors can do to promote their books, and it is a beautiful trailer. But what I do is I send lots of books out to influencers, like maybe 40 or 50 influencers. I hire somebody to do a national blog tour, which I think
uh-huh.
is really effective. And then, of course, I do a lot of the little things, like Twitter and Facebook, online interviews, we'll see, speaking engagements, book signings, online contests, and then I have an RSS feed on my website that I can keep readers updated with different things. It's similar to a blog, but you can put anything on there and your feelings and thoughts, but you can also keep readers updated with things. And so, anyway, those are some of the things that I do.
And
seriously, though, can't you see the writers who are sitting and listening to this show on the radio just starting to cringe and pull their hair out and say, I can't do all that?
Well, I think there is a certain level
yeah.
of that, you know, you work so much doing what you love, which is writing, and then I think there's almost this scary realization that, guess what, there's this job.
Yeah.
And
understanding that really what you need to do as a writer, and because of my time constraints, what I had to do, I had to decide on two or three things that I would focus on doing well. And then I would look to see if there were measurable results. I'd look to see if there were spikes in sales or if they saw sales coming up in a new area where they hadn't been before after I'd done a radio interview. And I work hand in hand with the publishing house to make sure that they're doing marketing when I'm speaking or that they're making sure the books are available. All of those kinds of things, so that it is very definitely a partnership. But for me, it took deciding, okay, what am I really good at? And I'm really good at connecting with people. I'm really good at relationship. And so it was my website, and it was blogging and Twitter and Facebook, those kinds of things where people start to feel as though they know you. I've had people come to writers' conferences because they've found out about me on Facebook, and we talk back and forth together, and they'll come up and introduce themselves as, I'm your Facebook buddy, this person. And so it's really... It's about relationship for me on every front. That's just a key for me. And so I had to figure out what things worked in that area because then it became fun.
You know, that segues into one of our last questions, which is, what do you feel is the most effective way to promote your books? And what I'm hearing from you is that you kind of have to match up what you're good at and what you like to do and just choose certain things and not give up your all your time to it. Is that
right? It's that, and it's understanding what the unique selling proposition is for your book. What makes your book different from any other? And start promoting it early. There's a gentleman out there who actually was contracted to write a book about the stories about his cat. A year before he even turned in the manuscript, he started a blog about cats. It went viral. People just started coming in and posting their cat stories. He let them post their cat pictures. By the time his book released, he had people 10,000 strong waiting on tenterhooks for that book to come out, and it just took off. So it's building that buzz from the ground up and building it as early as you possibly can.
And just a follow-up question to that, too, because we're talking about relationship building, and well, one of the things that I always, when I'm talking about promotion and trying to relay what I believe about promotion, we always talk about monologue versus dialogue, and relationships aren't one way.
Right.
Which of course, is why things like Facebook, or you were talking about the gentleman with the cat blog, allowing other people to post their own stories
exactly.
On his blog. How important is it to have the back and forth?
I think it's vital. I think that's the way that readers get a sense of who you are and what your passions are, and that they resonate to you. And that's the way that, as a writer, for me, it tells me where my readers are at and what's troubling them and what delights them. And I know how to speak to them then through my stories.
Perfect. Now, Anita, I want to ask you the same question. What do you feel is the most effective way to promote your books?
Well, I assume there's a lot of different ways, but one that I would like to talk about is that I give away a lot of books. And if, for instance, because I believe word of mouth is very powerful out there, I've always heard that it really is, and I do believe that. For instance, if I get, I usually get a deep discount from my publishers, so I will buy boxes and boxes of books. And so if I'm at the dentist office and I'm talking about it or something, and I feel like the person really would read it, pass it on, tell somebody about it, that sort of thing, I will give the book away, and I do a lot of that. And I think it really does help. I don't know exactly. It's hard to nail down to know exactly how effective it is, but I do believe in word of mouth.
Well, you know, Anita, I know that Chris Anderson, who wrote The Long Tail, he's very well known for social media marketing, and he actually wrote a book called Free. There really is some power behind. You know, and of course you can't, you can't give away everything for free. You know, there's got to be a balance in there. But, you know, you never know when you're going to give something to that one person
mm-hmm.
who it's going to result in, they're a lifetime buyer of your books
mm-hmm.
and they tell all their friends, you know. So you just kind of have to have that feel. Like you were saying, if you had a feeling that this person would benefit from your book or, you know, that then you'd make that decision, yes, this is a good investment. I'm going to give them a book.
Yes. I think, Karen, were you going to say something on that?
I'm sorry?
Oh, I was just wondering if you had, it seems like you were cutting in and you wanted to say something about giving away books. Do you give away a lot of books, too?
Yes and no. I take, actually, what they send me is my author copies. I get 100 author copies, and so I use those to give them away. I also will, for a limited time, offer them, say, for $1. It's interesting to see when somebody has to give you something for the book, it seems to hold more value for them at times. But one of the things I was going to ask you is, if you travel very much, do you take copies with you to give to flight attendants on planes?
You know, I've not done that before, but what a great idea. Yeah,
that is great.
The flight attendants are always desperate for things to read, and so I take them with me whenever I travel and give them to them on all the different legs.
You definitely travel more than I do, though.
Oh, my word, yes.
Lots of travel.
The piano music tells us that we're out of time. I want to thank you both. Anita, thank you so much for wearing two hats. Karen, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate you both.
You are so welcome, and Anita, it's been a delight to connect with you again.
Thank you very much, both of you.
And I want to thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio. You can download the podcast at blogtalkradio.com/circleof7. You can download it from iTunes, Blueberry, and a lot of other online social sites. But the show will be available within about an hour after it airs, and you can always follow up with any questions or look for links. We're going to put a bunch of links up at www.readersentertainment.tv/radio. I'm your host, Sheila English, and I want to thank you all so much for joining us.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions. www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.